Hi, how are the monkey here? Welcome to Audio Theater Central. You're going to have a great time. I know I did.
Porchlight Family Media,
your source for family-centered content.
PorchlightFamilyMedia.com.
And now, Audio Theater Central.
Oh, hi there. I'm John Avery Whittaker. Most folks around here call me Whit.
My name is Finian Jones, and you are...
Hello, I'm Dave Arnold, your host for Focus on the Family Radio Theater.
Hello, welcome to Audio Theater Central. This is the show that's all about family-friendly audio drama. I'm JD.
And I'm Roy.
And I am laughing at Roy.
Nice to meet you, laughing at Roy.
Thanks, Andrew.
And great. I'm Andrew.
Great
and
way to still start laughing the show at Roy.
Just dropping headphones all over the studio and falling out of his chair. And
oh, fun times.
Quite hilarious.
Yeah.
Well, this is episode 94. We are broadcasting from the Valley of the Sun, the Valley of Heat in Phoenix, Arizona. And yeah, it's...
aptly named this month.
Exactly. We got some in-studio guests today. We have Michael and Jackson. Not Michael Jackson. Michael and Jackson. They're two separate people. So we're glad that that's...
Glad you made that clarification, yeah. JD.
Me too, because if Michael Jackson was in here, I think I'd leave.
I would be scared.
Yeah, that would be very scary.
Oh. Well, hey, we've got a lot of fun stuff in this episode coming up. We've got a review of Iliad House, Season 1, Series 1, or The First Adventure. Pick whichever one you like the best. The first six episodes called Time. And we've got some feedback from Abigail, Jackson, and Keegan. We've got some audio drama tidbits coming up, some fun ones that we got some information about the next album of the Brinkman Adventures coming up. And we even have a newscast. I mean, can you believe this?
Wow.
Oh, and I forgot. We also have an interview with Phil Lawler.
Whoa.
The co-creator of Adventures in Odyssey and the creator, writer, and director of Iliad House.
Can I put that on my newscast? Like, an Audio Theater Central recently interviewed Phil Lawler.
That's a good idea.
That's a great idea.
Except, or will recently interview.
Yeah. Yeah. Stay tuned, because Audio Theater Central will interview Phil Lawler.
Yeah. Something like that.
The Lamplighter Theater team just finished recording two new dramas in mid-May. The Giant Killer and Escape from the Eagle's Nest were recorded at the Lamplighter headquarters and will feature actors Rich Swingle and Israel Oyelamide, along with several Lamplighter Guild alumni. Both dramas are now available for pre-order at a discounted price. Wise King Media has released three more new Jonathan Park episodes available on CD or as part of a JP Unlimited subscription. The album is called The Mysterious Statue, and it continues where Digging Deeper left off, with Jonathan still exploring the pyramids of Egypt. Tickets are on sale now for the 2017 AIO Get in the Show finale. The event will be held on August 12th at the Focus on the Family headquarters in Colorado Springs and will feature the top three finalists as well as Andre Stoica, Katie Lee, and Shona Kennedy. That's it for the news this time. I'm Roy, reporting for Audio Theater Central.
We made it.
Oh, wait. Breaking news. ATC will be interviewing Phil Lawler in a few. This just in.
In fact, Roy, Phil is joining us right now. Well, Phil, I just want to say thank you so much for taking time to chat with us. I know you're a busy guy. You've got a lot of things on your plate. And just want to say thank you for joining us.
Well, bless your heart. Thank you. I'm very, very happy to be with you on this fine Saturday, this absolutely baking hot Saturday. But you guys are in Phoenix, and I'm in Los Angeles, and I know that both of us are just broiling.
Exactly. Oh, not been fun.
And then you have to turn off all the air conditioning in the studio, and you have to turn off all the fans because you don't want these, like, you know, annoying stuff going on. So we'll just sit here and sweat. I don't think people understand just how much we give for these interviews. I just don't think that we're... I'm sitting in my own gravy here.
Yeah, so. Yeah. Sacrificing for the craft.
Absolutely.
Well, I wanted to start off with we're here to talk about Iliad House, but I just wanted to start off with a couple of other questions before we jump into that.
Sure.
You said on a recent Odyssey Scoopcast interview that Wit is the Aslan of Odyssey. Can you flesh that out a bit more? Like, what exactly does that mean?
Well, for me, Wit has always been the mover and the shaker in Odyssey. He has always been the sun around which planet Odyssey revolves. I don't mean by that that Wit is supernatural, obviously. He's not like Aslan was in terms of supernatural ability, but I think that Wit knows what's going on in town. Wit also causes a lot of the things, at least among the kids that he knows, that go on in town. And everybody, you know, he's not just this kindly old grandfather who serves ice cream. He does a lot more than that. And he is there for a reason. And his reason is to, you know, to help the kids understand their place in the world and what they're supposed to be doing and how they're supposed to live their lives as Christians, and that the Christian life can be this wonderful, wonderful adventure. And sometimes I feel like that we're kind of getting into a rut in some of the scripts where we weren't really utilizing Wit the way we need to utilize Wit. So part of my goal in coming back is to make sure that we understand just who Wit is and what kind of a guy he is and who he is. And that plays into actually some new projects that are going on right now, too. So we got some real fun stuff coming up for everybody, and I just want them to stay tuned and keep your eyes peeled because there's some real cool things coming up.
That's awesome, and I totally agree. It does seem like, in some ways, Wit has kind of taken a back seat over the past few years, and I'm very, very glad to hear that we're going to be moving away from that.
Yeah. I understand the need for new characters. I mean, good grief, we've been on the air for 30 years now. And, you know, it's hard to keep that momentum going. It's hard to keep the character continuing to do new and fresh things. It's hard to keep any of them doing new and fresh things. But Odyssey was this thing that sprang out of my head and Steve Harris's head. And when we first started doing it, and then when Paul McCusker came aboard, we really tried to have this different kind of tone and different kind of feel for Odyssey that we really wanted to, you know, make that the series something different. It wasn't going to be a kind of a typical series. And because of that, it has expanded into the Odyssey verse, basically. There's all sorts of stuff that goes on there. It's a real town in many respects. And so we have to keep all of these balls in the air, juggling all these balls in the air with all of these different characters. And Wit kind of gets lost sometimes in all of that. But I want to make sure that Wit doesn't get lost, that he's doing what he has always done, and that everybody understands that even if he's not in an episode, he's in an episode. He's there in some respect. Something's going on, you know, behind the scenes, something's happening that he is a part of, even if he's not actually physically in an episode. And that's sort of what I meant by he's sort of the Aslan of Odyssey.
This is the first time I've ever heard anybody vocalize this kind of a feeling about the character and the show in general. I have never heard this before. So this is very cool.
Oh, well, very cool. I'm glad you're
hearing it for the first time.
I must tell you, I mean, this has been in my head ever since Odyssey started. This is what I was thinking of right from the very beginning.
Wow.
Well, speaking of new characters, I mean, not long ago you introduced a new character, Renee Carter, on the OAC, or I should say the Adventures in Odyssey Club. And,
right.
You know, you've mentioned in multiple other interviews that you're enjoying writing for this character, and I was just kind of curious, what was the goal in creating her, and what do you hope to accomplish with this character?
Well, for Renee, there's a couple of things. First of all of my popular culture references comes from 1960s television. And I can't tell you how thrilled I have been that we've actually used a lot of the actors from 1960s television on Adventures in Odyssey, and I've gotten to meet them all, and it's been really wonderful. And they played, you know, major roles in the program, for everybody from Dave Madden to, you know, Hal Smith to Walker Evanston, all of them. But at any rate, so if you look at Star Trek, the original Star Trek, if Wit is Kirk, and Eugene is Spock, and Connie is Dr. McCoy, Bones McCoy, and Wooten is sort of the red-shirted expendable crewman. We needed a Scotty. And That's who Renee is. Renee is Scotty, basically. She's an engineer, and she is really good with math, and she gives Eugene a run for his money when he needs to intellectually, as far as computers are concerned. But she also, the other thing I wanted to really do with her is that she is a character who doesn't really believe. She lost her faith. And so we're trying to slowly deal with that aspect of her life and some of the stuff that's going on in her life and through the episodes. And it helps us to also kind of recapture that sort of story arc that we can do with characters as we bring them in, again, with Wit, trying to sort of influence, trying to sort of guide along, give her things to do that show her that God is real, God is there, God is present in her life, and that that what she has rejected, she needs to come back to. Now, whether she will or not is a different story. We don't know yet. But she's also kind of an aspect of my personality in that I am a guy who loves philosophy and has a degree in philosophy and studied philosophy. And so her name, if you know about philosophy, is basically René Descartes. She's René Descartes. And he was, René Descartes was, of course, the philosopher who came up with cogito ergo sum, I think, therefore I am. And so her whole basis of life is based on that kind of philosophy. And Descartes came up with the Cartesian number line. And so he was a mathematician. And so that's sort of the impetus behind her character. So, you know, again, all these references to 1960s television and Star Trek, of course, which I was an original fan from way back when.
I love how you work all these little things into the stuff that you do. Phil, it's awesome.
And one more question before we jump into Iliad House.
Sure.
We cannot talk to Phil Lawler without talking about Jungle Jam and Friends.
So, oh, my goodness. We're hitting all the bases today.
So what would it take to get new Jungle Jam episodes?
Lots and lots of money, I guess.
I figured that would be the answer. Oh, okay.
We have talked about it, and Jeff and Nathan and I have talked about it a lot, and we would love to do it. I think if everybody could work out their schedules and the timing was right, and we knew that there was still, you know, I have a feeling there's still a lot of fans out there, and it could be a really wonderful thing. But it's simply a matter of time, and us being very, very busy with other things, and so because of that, we simply haven't gotten together, and we sort of. We need to. I mean, I think we need to get together and do it, but I wish there were a way for us to do it. It would be lovely if we had, like I said, lots of money so that we didn't have to work on other things and then we could just come together and do Jungle Jam. But, you know, keep your fingers crossed and, you know, keep the prayers floating up and we'll see what we can do. Maybe we can get something going.
Well, take our word for it. There are lots of fans out there. I guarantee you.
Well, bless your heart. I appreciate that.
So what can we do to get David to finish up that one that's been sitting on his computer for 2 years?
Well, see, again, David Buller, I mean, he's very busy. He's a really well-known engineer now in Hollywood. A lot of the industry folks use him a lot, and so he just doesn't have a whole lot of time to devote to something that's basically a freebie for him. And so it's really difficult to pull people away from their living. And as you get older, then unfortunately, you also lose a lot of energy. I mean, we're old men now. We're old. We don't have the energy that we used to have when we were little kids and we were young like you guys, you whippersnappers.
All right. Well, let's dive into Iliad House.
All righty. Speaking of energy.
So just to clarify something real quick, what is the terminology you're using for this project? I mean, is this season one, or are you going with the British Vernacular Series 1, or are we just calling it the first adventure?
You know what? Call it what you want. I don't think it's a season because it's too short. It's too short to be a season. I would call it Series 1, which would be fine with me. You know, I think it's, I like that better than, you know, again, season is just too short.
All right. That works.
All right, so you said in an interview with Austin Peachy that you had done a lot of the post-production on the show, and on the episode credits, it mentions Jerry Phillips. Can you clarify the roles on the creative team just a little bit for us, please?
Sure. Jerry Phillips is my twin brother.
Aha! Mystery solved.
He lives in the mirror in my bathroom. and I, you know, I let him come out every once in a while just to do post production on the Iliad House.
That seems like a very cramped lifestyle.
Yes. So, yeah, that's basically. I mean, that's as much as I'll say on that. I did have wonderful help with Daniel Noah and with Craig Shibley, two good friends of mine. Daniel plays the part of the professor in Iliad House, Professor Portalis, Jesse's uncle. He's a fine actor and a fine writer and director in his own right, and one of our Guess What partners. And Craig Shibley is a good friend of mine. I've worked with Craig for years and years and years. He's an audio production guy, and they both helped out at the last three episodes a great deal. And I owe them a great debt of gratitude for doing that.
Well, I know you put a lot of thought into your story world and characters, as we just learned with that Renee example. So are there any interesting stories behind any of the place or character names in Iliad House?
Oh, good grief. How long is this interview? Well, let's put it this way.
Just pick two or three, then. We don't want to keep you all day.
Jesse lives on an island called Verity. Verity is, I believe, a Latin word for truth. Mm-hmm. His uncle's name is Christopher Portalis. Portalis is another name for portal. Jesse Davidson would be the son of David. Mm-hmm. You can draw your own conclusions there biblically. Cassandra Wilson. Cassandra, I believe, actually, it's in the stories. If you've listened to them, this is a spoiler, but Cassandra was, well, I don't want to say that because I want to, if you haven't heard it yet, you'll understand what Cassandra means when you listen to the story. So those are a few of them. You know, you have to cross the Verity River to get onto Verity Island. So you have to cross the River of Truth in order to get onto the Island of Truth. So, you know, there are things like that in there. There are lots of little bitty things in there. I will say also that the Mrs. McEd, the housekeeper, McEd comes from my three nieces' names. The first letters from my three. I have a niece called Mackenzie. I have another niece called Emily, and another niece. Her name is Delaney. So I took the Mick and the E and the D in McEd out of that. So that's where that name.
That's
came
cool.
From.
Wow,
that's amazing. Whose idea was it to pull a random line from the episode and tack it on to the end of the episode?
I decided to do that at the end. I thought that would be kind of fun to just have something from the episode itself that I found either funny or pointed or profound or, you know, just something that was in there or just something that was a really good performance piece, you know, something that somebody did in the individual episode that I thought was just like, you know, stellar, and you could pull it out and it could be 2 seconds worth of that at the very end. It was funny because when I first did that and I played it for my partners, they said, I think there's a mistake in here. Sounds like you didn't cut something out at the very end. No, that's purposeful. It'll be in every single one of them. Which, so it does. The very end, you're not expecting it. You're going, oh, that's weird. And then you hear it. Oh, it happened again. Oh, I guess we're doing this. Oh, this is cool.
Exactly. I loved it.
That was exactly my thought process. Sweet mango chutney? What?
Can you share a little bit about the production workflow? I know that some actors were recorded remotely, and that comes with a lot of challenges, of course. So how did you and the team work through that?
Not some actors, all of the actors were recorded remotely. I will say that there are no, when you hear Iliad House, what I find to be fun about it is there are no two actors in any given scene who are in the same room at the same time. There are no two given actors in any given scene who are in the same room on the same day. There are no two actors who are in any given scene who are in many cases in the same city or the same state. And in the case of Cassandra, she's not in the same country. She lives in Canada. So all of those actors who were recorded, I mean, I am the only one as the narrator who recorded something in my own studio. Everybody else recorded on different mics at different times in different places. And so I was just directing them over the phone, very much as we're doing right now. I was just recording and listening to them over the phone, giving them direction, reading opposite them so that they could do the parts that I wanted them to do. And then I got all their voice tracks. They, digitally mailed them to me, and I got all their voice tracks and put them all together and then cut them all together. And that was a wonderful, In some cases frustrating, but in most cases it was just a wonderful creative challenge. In fact, it was one of the most enjoyable things that I have done in a long time. I really loved getting in there and putting everything together because, you know, the challenge, of course, the technical challenge, as you guys know, is different microphones, different room noises, different microphone quality. And so you had to take all of that stuff into consideration. I mean, at one point, somebody's computer fan was going off. Their computer was getting too hot and the fan started going and I had their fan noise in the background the whole time. So how am I going to deal with this? How am I going to put that with other people who recorded in a studio? Some of them recorded actually in a nice studio and other people recorded in their rooms, in their bedrooms at home. And so I was just recording everybody anywhere that I could get them. And they all sent their stuff into me and I went, wow, okay, this is really sounding different. All of these people sound different. So how am I going to deal with this? And then you learn the process. You learn what to do technically to get them to sound a little bit like they're in the same room and in the same state, you know, and in the same proximity. And you try to, you figure out noise gates and you figure out all this other stuff in the post-production process. And then you cut them all together and you try to take the things and cut them together and cut some performances needed to be cut together. Some performances were really good all on their own and you cut things together and you go, okay, that flows. That's really nice. And sound effects and music cover a multitude of sins. And so that's what's really, really wonderful about that. You find the right effects, you find the right music, and then you play it out. So I'm really pleased. You know, these are the things that nobody's going to be thinking of when they hear the show. When you hear a show, when you watch a show, you hear a show, all you're saying is, what is there? And you don't know the backstory. You don't know how much, you know, effort went into it. You don't know what the production problems were. You don't know any of that stuff. So you're really only judging the story on basically how it's told, how well it's told, and how good the acting is and writing is and the production is and all that sort of stuff. You don't know all of the other things that go on behind it. But for me, I look at this, I listen to this show, and it's just like a special favorite of mine because I know all of the work that went into it. I know everything that went into it. And I listen to it and I go, wow, this still works. That's really cool. You know, despite all of those technical problems, I think it still works. And it's like, oh, that's really cool. I still laugh at the same places. I was just listening to it. As a matter of fact, I just went to get some coffee. I came back in my car. I was listening to it and I'm still laughing at the same places. I've heard it, you know, hundreds of times now. I'm still laughing at the same places. I'm still crying at the same places. I'm still, you know, amazed at the same places. So I'm like, oh, you know, this actually worked. It was pretty good.
Yeah, and remote directing is nothing unusual in the voiceover world in general, but not so much in audio drama, except for, at least in high quality audio drama. And so I think you really, really pulled it off. I mean, I listen to a lot of stuff, and there's a lot of really terrible audio drama out there right now in terms of quality. And primarily, or one of the major reasons is because of remote acting, and they're not skilled enough to know how to work with those different recording environments and how to blend things together. And so this is the highest quality remote production that I have heard. I mean, it's really, really well done.
Well, bless your heart. Thank you for saying that. I really appreciate that. You know, I for a long time, I've wondered, I teach courses at Azusa Pacific University, and we talk about the quality of dramas, audio dramas and videos and movies and whatnot. And part of the things we talk about is art versus the Christian content and things like that. And I've come up with a theory that it's, you know, it's not so much the writing we all have these opinions about whether Christian movies and Christian, you know, products out there are any good or not. And a lot of us go, well, you know, it's not quite up to the standard of this. But my theory is that it's not really the writing. Yes, some of the writing is subpar, but the thing that makes a lot of Christian films just kind of not up to par is not the writing, it's the directing. I think that there are a lot of, and that's just a skill that you kind of have to develop over the years. There's a feel to it, but there's also a lot of, you just have to have the background and the experience to be able to know how to handle actors. And it's really the direction of the actors more than anything else, the subtleties of performance and the subtleties of line delivery and how those things play out. And I think that's where a lot of what I'm seeing in Christian films and stuff like that just doesn't rise up. It's not necessarily the writing. It's the actual directing. So, I mean, we have a lot of good technical stuff. There's a lot of people who do things really well technically. But when it comes to performance, I think that's where a lot of people go, well, it just wasn't quite there. And I think that's a function of directing.
Well, that makes a lot of sense. I mean, because we've worked with, you know, our own audio drama productions, and of course, none of us have professional experience doing that. And so, you know, you know in your head how you want this to play out and how you want it to sound, but having the knowledge to be able to direct the actor to get that result is, you know, it just takes practice and time, I would imagine. And so that makes a lot of sense.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. It just takes a lot of doing it. It really does. It's one of those kinds of, it's this kind of strange profession. In order to get good at it, you have to do a lot of it, but it's really difficult to do a lot of it because it's so expensive to do it. And so you just have to kind of figure out a way of getting around all that by saying, well, I'll just do it myself. And that's part of what Alien House is done too. That's part of what you guys are doing, which is great. I mean, just keep doing it. When you keep doing it, you keep learning the tricks and you keep getting the whole ideas and the whole sensibilities about stuff. And then you realize, okay, you know, then you do what I call stupid director tricks. You can, you know how to get around the problems a little bit more. You know how to get the performance out of somebody a little bit more. It's the same thing with writing. You get to a point where you're in writing, it's stupid writer's tricks. Oh, I've got this impasse in my story. I don't know what I've done. Okay, well, let's pull out some of the tricks. Let's pull out what we can do to see how we can get around this and not make everybody go, oh, brother, you know, this, that, you know. That's kind of the goal toward everything, is just try to get better and better and better at it. And the more experience you have, the more you can do that. But I will say this also, no matter how much experience you have, I mean, I've been doing this now just on Odyssey for 30 years and doing it in the business for nearly 40. And one of the last projects that I just completed, is coming out, you know, hopefully next year, but I just completed working on it right now. And I was in the middle of that project thinking, I am the biggest hack in the world. I cannot do this. I don't know where this, my creativity is gone. I'm going to be finally exposed for the big, huge hack that I am. All the confidence went away. There was nothing there. I was like, I can't do this. I don't know why they even wanted me to even try doing this. You can't do this. And like I'm saying, even after 40 years in the business, almost a lifetime of doing this, you don't ever get over those feelings of, oh my goodness, you know, I really am a fraud. I really have no talent whatsoever. And so you just got to press through.
Yeah. Yeah. Now they call that the imposter syndrome. I've dealt with that myself in different projects. So yeah, it's a real thing.
You know, we used to talk about this on Jungle. You talk about Jungle Jam. We used to talk about this on Jungle Jam all the time. It'd be so funny. We would be in the studio just laughing, doing funny stuff and voices and coming up with ad libs. And I think it was Jeff Parker one day who said, I keep getting this feeling that somebody's going to walk into this studio, tap us on the shoulders and say, guys, the jig is up. You've had your run. It's been fun, but you need to go do something else now. all the way through your career, you get this sort of thing all the way through your career where you're just like, yeah, well, the adults are going to come in now. And then again, like I said, I'm an old man now, so there are no adults above me. They're all gone. So I guess it's me now who's going to tap everybody else and go, hey, you know what? Out of the pool.
Well, I think my measure of success for any audio drama is what does my wife think about it? Because she is a quote-unquote normal person. In that she doesn't, when she listens to an audio drama, she just listens to it. She doesn't listen at any of the details, so to speak. So it says a lot that given the challenges that you guys faced, or that you faced specifically with recording actors remotely and all that stuff, that, you know, that a person with fairly discriminating audio drama tastes was intrigued by the story. And the main thing that is always an issue for her is if the acting, and from what I think you're saying is as a function of the directing, if it's subpar, the whole thing falls apart for her. She can't get into it if it's not well acted and thus, of course, well directed. So I think that, like JD said, that you really pulled it off because a normal person was really into the story, never had any problems with the acting. It was excellent. And so that's always my barometer. So I would say that you knocked it out of the park for sure.
Oh, bless your heart. Well, thank you very much. And thank your wife. Her check is in the mail, by the way.
That's awesome. So since you didn't have to write this in order to fit it into a half-hour radio time slot, did you feel a little bit more freedom to play around with the episode length?
Yes, actually I did. I will tell you that there's a lot of material that has still been cut from this. I didn't feel, you're right, I didn't feel the constraints of time, so I didn't have to fit it into, even though each episode does fit within a half hour slot, it doesn't fit within a commercial half hour slot.
Right.
But so, you know, I couldn't just take these and put them on the air right now because, you know, they would go, well, there's no room for our commercials. So I'd have to edit them down in order to put them on the radio. But they do, all each of them do fit within a half hour. And the reason for that, of course, is you only have like 80 minutes on a CD. I recorded a lot of stuff and I wrote a lot of stuff and a lot of it ended up not being used. I had to cut. So there was a whole bunch of material out there that I haven't used. And I don't know that I can use it in any other way. Maybe, you know, someday maybe I'll try to fit it all and get it out there on a special features disc or something like that. It's a lot of stuff from the narrator. It's a lot of narrator stuff. That was the first stuff that could easily be cut, and so I cut that stuff first. But then there was other things that happened with some of the characters and some of the things that happened in there that I just said, you know, this has got to come out. I don't have time for all of this, and the show's going to be extra long, and I can't fit it all onto – it became a kind of an economic concern at some point because you can't fit everything onto a CD. You know, we only wanted two CDs in this package as a six-part episode, so – we could fit three episodes on one CD if I made them less than a half hour of each. So that is that kind of thing. And so it became cost effective to do it that way. And so, yeah, a lot of material ended up not there. So this story was something that I had been tooling around in my brain for a long, 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 long time. And then this story went through a lot of different changes, I will say that. It went through a lot of different machinations. Originally, Iliad House, the concept of Iliad House, was going to be a spinoff for Adventures in Odyssey. And I had talked about that for a long time with some of the people over at Focus, and it seemed like we were going to do it, and then that just didn't happen for various and sundry reasons. And so I said, well, I'm going to keep the concept. I'm going to mess around with it and put it in the back of my brain. But, I mean, even the initial story idea of a train that travels through time was something that I talked about with a friend of mine years ago and just kind of kept in the back of my head. And so after Iliad House for Focus on the Family didn't work out, I said, I'm going to take the concept. I'm going to change it all around, take out all the Odyssey people, take out anything that has to do with Focus and Odyssey, but take this concept of a time train and put that back into this and see where I can go with that. And so I wrote it out and kept writing on it and stuff. And then I went back to school and went in my graduate program at Cal State LA. I needed a thesis. And so this script became a feature film, and it was my thesis script for my Master of Fine Arts degree. And in it, I had to also put all of the research that I had on time travel and all of the other stuff. So I was trying to come up with a different spin on the time travel notion, which is what I was going for in the script. And then, so all of that stuff this is a long-winded explanation, but all of that then said, okay, when I want to do Iliad House, I decided I'm going to take this and I'm going to cut it into six parts. And then I'm going to use some of the other research that I did on time travel to help flesh things out with the narrator and stuff like that. So that way it can explain some of the narrator stuff. He can explain what's going on in some respects. And so it was really fun and really good, and trying to make it humorous and trying to make, you know, some of the narrator pieces humorous and trying to make some of the stuff that's going on humorous and adventuresome at the same time and still very dramatic in places. And, you know, good. I hope it worked out.
Oh, it did.
Yeah, definitely.
Did. Well, good.
Well, we have two listener questions for you. And Austin Peachy asked, who is your favorite character in Iliad House to write for?
I don't really have a favorite as far as that's concerned. I can't really pick one character that I would say, oh, I really, really love that character more than anybody else. I do like the character of Chester. I think Chester is a lot of fun to write for. And I like Jesse. I like I love the dynamic between Jesse and Cassandra and Stu. All of those were really fun to work out. Again, when I hear some of the stuff that's in there, when I hear some of the exchanges when they're going through their adventures and they're getting in their peril and yelling back and forth at each other and all that sort of stuff, I realize they weren't in the same room. And yet it's, you know, it still works. It's like, yo, that's really fun. I think that's the key. You know, full disclosure here, Austin is in Iliad House.
Right.
So we have to have full disclosure here. He's Randy Barnes at the very beginning. And then he also plays another part, I think in episode 5.
Well, and Tracy and Ian, who played Jesse and Cassandra, my goodness, they did a phenomenal job.
Oh, yes. I agree with you. They're fantastic. They were. Elliot House is also part of me trying to put my money where my mouth is. For years, I've preached, you know what? Everybody should be able to do this. The technology is available to everybody. You need a decent quality microphone, but in your computer, in your iPad, on your iPhone, you have a recording studio, and it's as good as any recording studio you're going to find just about anywhere else. All you need is a quiet room, and you just need to do this, and you know, there's no reason. Technology has made it available. You don't have to go to the big studios anymore. You can do it yourself. And so I was preaching that for a long time, and I thought, well, you know what? It's time for me to put my money where my mouth is. And so learned a lot while I was doing it. It's not quite that simple, but the idea was, you know, find people who are around you who are talented, because they're out there. They're, you just got to look for them.
Well, you know, and I know three guys in Phoenix who are very talented as well. So,
So here's the next caveat: find people around you who are talented and who will work cheap.
I raise my hand.
That's right. That's right. We'll work for free.
Yeah. And you find them, and there are all sorts of people out there across the great fruited plain, as Rush Limbaugh calls it, who are really good, and they just haven't. You know, have in the past, it would have been impossible for them to do anything because they weren't able to move from their where they lived in the Midwest to Los Angeles or New York or one of the, you know, media capitals. Yeah. But now you don't need to. Now it's right there, right. You know, you can record stuff. You can, you're doing it in Phoenix, and you know, it's great that my partners live in Virginia and Tracy lives up in Canada. So it's possible to do this everywhere, and it's possible to bring all of those things together into one. They all come together into one computer, basically, and are cut together and to make a compelling radio drama as an audio drama. So again, this was sort of that experiment. There are talented people all over the place. What makes me think that I have the only, you know, that my little cadre of actors here are the only talented people in the world? Well, they're not. So let's go find them. They're out there. Let's use them. Let's bring them together and record them and get them working. Get people to understand that this is, that we have the technology that's available to make us do all of this stuff. And so that was another impetus behind Elliot House. I really wanted to make sure that was going to happen.
That's awesome.
I have a question, and it just came to me while we were talking to you.
Yes.
Where did the phrase Jupiter's moons come from?
Well, if you notice, I love taking one of the things that I really love taking actual things like sweet mango chutney and Jupiter's moons and making them into exclamations, and if I may say so, sort of substitutes for expletives. Every once in a while I'll hear one of these things, you know, like Great Barrier Reef, you know, you say that and it's the Great Barrier Reef, or it's Great Barrier Reef, we got to do this and this and this. So Jupiter's moons was just kind of came about that way. You know, it was the same kind of thing. I heard that one day and somebody said it and put the emphasis on the wrong syllables. You know, if you say something one way with certain emphasis on syllables, it becomes completely informative and scientific. If you say it in a different way, it becomes an exclamation. It becomes something else. So Jupiter's moon struck me as that way. So did sweet. I read sweet mango chutney on a menu. We got sweet mango chutney. I was like, oh, that would be great. Sweet mango chutney. And part of that, I tell you, one of my inspirations for that is Will Ryan. Will loves to do stuff like that too. He'll just come up, we'll say something, you know, we'll read something in a menu, we'll be at dinner or something, and he'll read something in a menu, and all of a sudden he'll go, oh, and he'll use that as an exclamation point or something. And he's very good with wordplay that way. So yeah, you know, then Jupiter's moons became sort of this Jesse's catchphrase.
Very cool. I love it.
Yeah. So Samuel Robinson also wanted to ask, I think the question that is on all of our lips, actually. So what's next for Elliot House? Is there a projected release date for season two, or how far have we gotten down the road of the next adventure for Disney?
Well, it's brewing around in my brain, to be quite honest. Again, you know, it's a matter of finances and time. As much as I'm grateful for the response, and it's been really, really wonderful, the response for Elliot House has been great.
It hasn't been humongous. It's not like Odyssey response yet. Hopefully it will be out there soon enough and get bigger, but we have to raise the money. So I have to figure out how to do that. And that's what I've been working on, to raise the money so that I can take the time out to be able to get this done. So unfortunately, you know, this is a labor of love. I definitely have the next series in my brain. I just got to get it out on my computer keyboard and then go through the process again. So it'll take a little while, but hopefully, you know, once again, not everybody in the world has heard Iliad House as it is now. It's the first series. So once the first series is, we can keep plugging the first series to get it out there. And then once that happens, then hopefully we'll raise enough capital to be able to do series two. So, you know, I wish I had a better answer for you. I really do. I'd love to be able to say, oh, it's going to be here at this point. But again, I've got several other things that are cooking on the front burners. And so Iliad House, unfortunately, has to be put to the back burner at the present. But hopefully those things that are on the front burner will be very soon done, and I'll be able to devote more full-time attention to Iliad House.
Well, we're definitely going to do our little part to help get the word out, because we absolutely love it.
Bless you for that.
Well, thank you very much, Phil, for taking the time to chat with us. It's been a blast. It's always fun talking with you.
Absolutely, absolutely. Let's do this again. Let's do this more. I love doing stuff like this. Let's get your program and Iliad House and all this stuff out there for everybody to hear.
I'm game. Oh, big thanks to Phil for joining us on the show. That is a blast. He's always fun to talk to.
Yes.
Yes, Phil is an excellent interviewee.
Yes.
We love talking to Mr. Lawler.
Indeed.
Hey, we've got some exclusives in there, so hey, right. this is fun. And, you know, we're getting ready to jump into this, but you really need to check out Iliad House if you haven't yet. Let's jump into the review. Iliad House, Season 1, The First Adventure, Time. Released fall 2016. It's a little over 2.5 hours long, almost 2 hours and 40 minutes total between the six episodes. And, oh my goodness, just some amazing audio drama. It really, really is.
You will not be able to stop listening. You'll just have to listen all the way through.
It's impossible.
Yeah. It just keeps going.
And isn't that great? You don't have to wait a week between episodes. I mean, you can just download six episodes or grab the CD from IliadHouse.com and just listen to them back to back to back.
That's right.
To back to back to back.
Mm-hmm.
Six.
Five. Seven. Five backs.
Six. Oh, yeah, five.
Well, six backs.
Right.
What do you say about giving us the summary for the listener who has not heard this series yet?
Fourteen-year-old orphan Jesse Davidson lives with his emotionally distant and peculiar uncle, Christopher Portalis, in Iliad House, a mysterious old mansion on an island off the east coast of the United States. Just when Jesse is finally getting used to living on the island, he discovers that the old abandoned train he and his friends have been using as a clubhouse for the past year can actually move through time. They get caught up in a series of adventures fraught with temporal distortions, political intrigue, secret societies, and supernatural battles, all as they try to cope with the daily pressures and craziness of adolescence. While traveling through the future and the past, they learn hard truths and secrets about themselves, and that there is forgiveness and redemption available to all who desire it. And as Jesse and his uncle come to understand each other, Jesse begins to see that there is much more to Iliad House and to why he and his uncle are there than anyone realizes.
I'm just letting that sink in for a couple of seconds here. I mean, it's just...
That's right. Let the moment breathe.
Yeah.
Beat.
It's just like, that's a perfect encapsulation of this series. I mean, there's so much going on that it's almost a little bit hard to follow at first, because you really are kind of jumping through time. And, well, not kind of, you are, they are, you know. And so, and even the way the story is laid out and the way it's narrated, it kind of hops around on a timeline, you know, right. So it's not all linear.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So, casual listening is not advised.
Right.
Yeah.
So, you need to pay attention.
Yeah. not that you're going to hurt yourself or anything. I mean, it's not that kind of advisory.
No.
But it's just great stuff. As we mentioned, Phil Lawler, writer, director, sound design and production by Jerry Phillips, whoever he is.
The man in the mirror.
Yeah, the man. Oh, yeah, I like that. Or the guy in the glass.
The man behind the glass.
There. Oh, yeah.
and also Daniel Noah and Craig Shibley. Daniel Noah specifically on the episode called Open War, and Craig on the episode called The Clearing, and music by Justin Durbin. Now, as we mentioned, there are six episodes. The first one is called First Impressions, then Time Train, then Visions of Reality, then Blood Money, then Open War, and The Clearing. Now, this is a serial story, so we are not going to go episode by episode and give our thoughts on each one, because we can't. That would just spoil the whole storyline.
Exactly.
So we're going to do our best to give you a general overview and kind of talk about some of the points that we really liked, and we're going to take that approach with this one. We always try to be spoiler-free. It's easier when we're doing like an Odyssey album, where it's not necessarily each episode is dependent upon the previous one. So
right.
We're going to try to take this approach, and hopefully we don't spoil anything for you. Although there's a lot of information in that summary there.
That's right.
Well, in lieu of a trailer, an audio trailer here, I'm going to play a couple minutes of the first episode. Now, if you haven't heard the series yet, go to IliadHouse.com, and the first episode is available on the website for free. So here's a couple minutes to give you a taste of Iliad House.
They say stories are best told by the people who live them. Well, you'll have to be the judge of that. But I'll do the best I can. And Jupiter's moons, what a story it is. This is the story of a young man named Jesse Davidson, an orphan, who came to live with his mysterious uncle, a professor named Christopher Portalis, at his even more mysterious home, a mansion, which sits on the southern tip of Verity Island off the eastern seaboard of the United States. Welcome to Iliad House. It is a well-known maxim that first impressions are extremely important. You never get a second chance to make a good one, so the rest of the maxim goes. It would be very interesting to discover everyone's first impressions of the guy who made up such a ridiculous maxim, the sole purpose of which seems to be to place extreme amounts of pressure on everyone's behavior at a first meeting. To truly get a correct impression of a person, of course, it is necessary to spend time with him or her. The more time spent, the more intense the impression.
Exactly. So we gave you a couple minutes to get a first impression of the episode called First Impressions.
That's right.
And it is... I think we should note that the first episode, it starts off with a lot of narration. It's like, is this all a narrated story? But it gets into audio drama, like the acting and whatnot, because there is some narration that had to set the story and whatnot, but then it gets into the character's story and whatnot.
Yeah, so it actually takes about 4 minutes to actually get to a scene. But yeah, and at first it was kind of threw me off a little bit, but it's like, you got to understand he's setting up the world,
right,
and the characters and everything. So I think it was fine. Now, the audio drama in general is narration heavy. There is a lot of narration throughout the episodes. But to me, it was fine because I love the quirky humor of the character of the narrator.
Exactly.
Reminded me of, I don't know why, but it just reminded me of Mark Twain.
Ah, yeah. I can totally see that.
Huh.
Maybe it is Mark Twain.
Maybe it
Anything can happen in this show.
He's in the time train.
Very true.
Yeah. So right away, I felt I really liked the character of Jesse Davidson. He's awesome.
Yes.
I love how he's trying everything he can in school and just like fails at it all. it was very realistic. And then they go right into politics. And the whole just running for student council thing was hilarious.
Yeah.
And then he asks his best friend, you know, well, you voted for me, right? And he's like, gotta go. Like, yeah.
It was a very like Phil Lawler thing to write, it seemed like to me. It reminded me of Robin when she's in that dream sequence and like when she's late to everything. And towards the end, it's just Robin, all these different voices like yelling at her or whatever. And they do that kind of a lot. Not a lot, but they've done it several times in Odyssey.
Good point.
As we were sitting here, I just got this aha moment.
I didn't even make that connection, but that's very good.
I got another one.
Okay, go for it.
I've got another one, yes.
Just keep it up.
That's right. So, does anybody else see the connection between the first few moments of the first episode of Iliad House and the first episode of Odyssey?
It's been a long time since I've heard that episode.
They do that, huh?
No, I'm talking about the actual story.
Oh.
Which? Like, the pizza one? Or?
Yes.
What's flopping?
You don't notice any similarities between Davey Holcomb and Jesse Davidson.
Oh, yeah. He's
kid who fails at everything, can't do anything right.
Whoa, Andrew.
Which, you know, flopping at everything. Now, Jesse's problems aren't resolved in 25 minutes like they are in that Odyssey, but it's kind of the same thing.
Very observant. I didn't pick up that one either.
Whoa, Andrew.
I love these connections.
I think you're thinking too much about this, Andrew.
Probably.
No, it's good.
Well, and the guy who plays Jesse Davidson is Ian Reid. Phenomenal job with that character. And then she's not right at in the beginning, but she becomes a friend, the character Cassandra Wilson. And she is played by Tracy Van Dolder. Phenomenal. I mean, that's, in my opinion, some of the best acting in the series.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, so good. She nails that character.
Definitely brings the character to life. You can tell she's kind of like, ooh, she is kind of like creepy or what's going on with her. And then, well, you'll just have to listen.
Yeah.
And then things happen.
Yeah. And then things
stuff
happen.
Stuff and things.
Story continued on page 2.
Yeah.
Like in the newspaper.
Yeah. And she really shines in the last episode,
mm-hmm.
which I will not say anything about. But, oh my goodness, the acting in that last episode by her and by Ian, and then also by the two different actors who play Stu.
Yeah.
Daniel Heffington plays young Stu, and Jared Lawler plays adult Stu. And I cannot believe that I missed this, and I meant to ask Phil, what's the relation here? You had a Jared Lawler. And we also have a Phil. Oh no.
Phil, how are you connected?
Phil, how are you connected to Phil Lawler? What is?
And there was also Ian Lawler, who plays a doctor in a later episode.
Mm-hmm.
So forgot mm-hmm. to ask him about that.
Ah, and Phil in that same episode makes a cameo appearance as a different person than the narrator. Which I don't think I even realized that. Maybe I did, but I don't remember.
Yeah. And, you know, we know Phil's a great actor. He is one of my favorite characters. It's so interesting because he wasn't like a huge character in Odyssey, but I love Dale Jacobs.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that character is, he added such a cool element to the town of Odyssey.
Right.
And he wasn't doing any silly voices or anything like that, but he was just a really good character.
Yeah. Let's get back to Iliad House. But we also have three actors here that are very familiar, or at least two that are extremely familiar. We have Chris Anthony, who makes an appearance in this series, and Katie Lee, who also voices a character in this series. And the third one is Karen Kennedy, who Odyssey fans will know from Life Expectancy. Is that what it was called?
Mm-hmm.
Karen Kennedy is Shona Kennedy's mother. Shona, obviously the actress who won the Get in the Show contest the last time around. and now plays Jules Kindle. But Karen played the nurse in the episode's life expectancy in the hospital, where, spoiler, mm-hmm. Connie's mom dies. But she also voiced did a great job with a character on Lifehouse Theater on the Air way back in the day. Job, a Modern Man. She played Job's wife.
Oh wow!
Who knew? Talk about making connections.
Wow,
she's a great actress, and my goodness, she plays this housekeeper. I think that's what you'd call her, right? Housekeeper, Mrs. McEd,
right?
And got this thick Scottish accent. And I did not even realize that it was her for the longest time. And then I heard her name in the credits and I'm like, oh my goodness, that is so good. She did a great job with that character. Yeah. I mean, she's not a huge major part or major character, but I was just like, man, that was really good.
Yeah.
And we can't really talk much about the story because there's too much that can be spoiled very quickly because there's a lot that happens. It's very action-packed. Audio drama. So
just look at the titles of the episodes.
That's right.
That might help a little.
That's right. The possibly obvious, but maybe not, play on words in the very title of this series, Iliad House has a connection to Odyssey.
Mm-hmm.
So
right.
Homer's Greek works Odyssey, and the other one was Iliad. So the name of Odyssey obviously comes from Odyssey.
Right.
And this one comes from the Iliad, so I thought that was kind of cool.
Now, there is – I mean, it's not a spoiler to say this because it's in the promo or in the summary, and Phil even referenced it, but it's a very different take on time travel.
Yeah.
An old locomotive, a train that is actually your vehicle to travel through time. I mean, like that's so – like, who would ever have thought of a train to be a time travel device?
Right.
Obviously, Phil, but...
Yeah, exactly. Somebody.
And then you can tell the sound designers had a fun time.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, man. I think I even heard the old Imagination Station in...
Yes, absolutely. I told that to my wife. I was like, hey, that's an Imagination Station sound.
Yeah.
Right there.
Yeah. It was really cool.
You mentioned that to me the other day, Roy, and I was just like, I did not even pick up on that.
Yeah.
That is the coolest thing, though. I love that.
Yeah.
And you know, because you've done a lot of sound design over the years, you like to hide little things in the mix sometimes just for the fun of it.
Right.
You know, you're the only one that knows it's there, but sometimes there's little things that are people can actually pick up. But I love that.
Yeah.
And it sounded like the Imagination Station landing.
Okay.
Yeah. Like what Roy, the noise that Roy made was pretty.
I can't do it very well, but
it was good.
Yeah.
A kind of high pitch down to a low pitch sound in the. Once they've already gotten in and gone through the launch sequence, or they're coming back.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool.
Well, and there is a lot of adventure, and it's fast-paced, and a lot of stuff happening, like you mentioned. But there is also a healthy dose of humor and a lot of that. And then there's also some really, really poignant scenes, especially to the last couple of episodes. And again, the acting, they pull off all of those different types of settings, and it's just – so good. But one of the characters, Stu, has a lot of funny lines and just like little snarky comments and stuff to his friends. And they're just so funny. And one of them that stuck out to me, I just cracked up laughing, is somebody said, I think Jesse says something like, because Stu is he's kind of the brains. He's the, you know, kind of an engineer type of a guy. He's like always messing around with the science projects and stuff like that. And so Jesse makes a comment about something that Stu had said, and he said, "Oh, ye of little brain." And I just love it. It just cracked me up.
I really like the robot character.
Chester.
Yeah. Which is really neat. And I didn't realize this too. I was looking over the Kickstarter campaign, just going through, but it was really neat. One of the Kickstarter backers got to name that robot.
Oh.
And I did not realize that. I was like, because I was wondering, like, where did they get the name? And that was actually one of the awards, or one of the
rewards.
One of the rewards is you got to name the robot. And so it's really interesting. I'm like, where did we get Chester? You know, that's a really interesting name. But anyway.
I didn't know that because I had thought maybe it was just Phil giving a nod to like a Gunsmoke or something, that.
Yeah.
Parley Bear, you know.
Right.
But that's cool. That's cool to know.
Yeah. This is some of the lines that he has, just so funny.
Exactly.
Or it has. Yeah. And I got to say that when we travel, we know it's a time travel, and when we travel into the future, I think that is the most hilarious time. The droids talking to each other is just hilarious.
Oh, yeah. That was really funny.
The elevator.
Yeah.
Ellie, yeah. The elevator.
Yeah.
Real creative with the name there.
Yeah.
Ellie, the elevator.
I think it's hilarious.
I love it. Well, and there's another, the character that Katie Lee voices. Mm-hmm. We don't really know who or what she is,
right?
But there's just a really cool processing that they do with it, with her voice. Like mm-hmm. it kind of pans around, and right. It's got this real ethereal sound to it.
Right.
I love what he did with that.
Yeah.
It's just really cool. And again, we don't know we know virtually nothing about that character. It's never even given a name.
Right.
In the show. But it's really, really cool. That was one of my favorite audio effects that I heard in the show. And as we mentioned, Phil is taking a very different approach to the whole concept of time travel. And believe it or not, some very intelligent people and great minds over the years have pondered this whole concept. And there are rules and laws to stay within when you're doing fiction, mm-hmm. because it has to make sense, you
right.
know?
Right.
And there's a lot of just interesting twists and turns about the whole concept of time travel in this and how it affects the future or the past, or, you know, it's just so fascinating. And I think Phil does a really great job of trying to make sense of that. And everything that happens, it fits and flows into the whole time-space continuum. I mean, it's really good.
Yeah, I have to say the last episode will literally just blow your mind, I think. Mm-hmm. Like, mm-hmm. when I got done with it, I was just like, what? I felt like the feeling when I finished Ted Dekker's trilogy. Like, I was like, is this the end or is this the beginning? Like, what is happening? You know, like,
the
like,
circle?
Yeah, the circle.
Yeah, okay.
Right. The black, red, white series. It'll that just blows your mind. You're trying to figure out. And then that's how I felt at the end of this. I was just like, whoa, what's happening?
So I'm an avid reader, and so I've been reading for many years, and I love that feeling when you finish an amazing book and you're just left sitting there just thinking about it, the concept, or even maybe just the characters. You've connected with them so well because of such good writing, and that's exactly how I felt when I finished the sixth episode of this series. I'm just like sitting there. I'm like, oh my goodness. And you're just contemplating the ramifications of what this means. Where's the story going to go? And wait a minute, what did that mean? Because this happened, and it's one of those kind of audio dramas.
It is.
I don't think I've ever heard an audio drama like this before.
No.
Mm-mm. It's totally different.
Yeah.
There's one episode, so Blood Money. I'm not going to go into the detail of it. I'm not going to tell you what happens, but they go into the Civil War time of American history. And there's a couple of scenes in there that every time I hear it, I get goosebumps. It's just like, oh my goodness, this is such good storytelling.
Yes. Agreed.
We referenced this in the interview with Phil, but all of the episodes are different lengths. So that's one of my favorites because it's the longest one. It's 27 minutes and 17 seconds. So they're just like, because you can Phil even acknowledge, you know, you can kind of let the story flow and breathe a little bit more when you don't have to be crammed into a 25-point, you know, 30-second time slot. Or I think some it may even be a little bit less than that, 24 minutes or something, something like that. So, you know, I'm really, really excited for this series to see where they go with it. Final thoughts. There's some crazy, amazing twists. Some of the stuff I'm like, okay. I kind of saw that coming, a little hint of it, but mm-hmm. the majority of it was just like, oh my word, I would have never dreamed of that in a million years.
Right.
Yep. Exactly.
2 points for wrapping this up for myself. Like we mentioned in the interview, I love how they, at the end of the show, they just throw on a little few second tag of, you know, something really funny in the show or something like a really good line from the show. I thought that was hilarious. And the second one is I'm so happy that at the beginning of every show, they didn't put in a 2-minute rewind of what happened in the first episode.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Yes.
It just kept going. I'm like, I don't want to hear this. I know. I know what's going
on. We finished listening to it 2 seconds ago, not 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
Amen.
Yes, absolutely. So let's acknowledge a couple of other team members real quickly before we wrap this up. The announcer was Tammy Romani. Great voice. Yes. I like that.
Yes.
She is the Chris Anthony of Elliott House.
Right, right.
And we had Joel Gruey, Abigail Ryan, Aaron Crosman, and Daniel Heffington, who also voices the character of Young Stu, but they did several other voices of some of the teachers that you referenced earlier, Roy. And then we had Micah Touche, who also did some voices for Tracy's Witnesses program. Micah Touche did a couple of different voices. I can't say which one on one of the episodes because that'll kind of give away what the episode was about. And then as Phil referenced, Austin Peachy voiced a few characters, some soldiers there in the Civil War scene and some others. So just a great cast. Again, everybody did a really good job. And as I mentioned earlier, this is probably the highest quality remote recorded audio drama production that I have ever heard. And I listen to a lot of stuff. I check out a lot of stuff that's going on in the independent audio drama production world. And this is extremely high quality stuff. Yes.
Like you never would have known that it was recorded remotely.
Yeah, never.
There was a slight hint I noticed a couple of times in Tracy's, some of Tracy's scenes, who plays Cassandra. But other than that, it's just so well done.
Yeah.
He did a great job of working with those different recording environments. And we should also mention that Tracy has a series of Witnesses. She's trying to get that off the ground. So if you're interested, there's a link in the show notes. Check that out. She's got a Patreon campaign trying to get that one up and running. She's got a couple of them already out. And another one coming out soon with Nathan Carlson playing the lead character. So that's a great biblical series.
Oh, cool.
So they're short stories from eyewitnesses of biblical events. So she's doing a really great job with that show. But Elliott House, if you haven't heard it already, you must listen to it. Go grab it. Links are in the show notes. You can get CD copies directly from ElliottHouse.com. Link in the show notes. And also digital copies from them directly or through iTunes. So you got to go listen. We got to support these productions. If we really want to see more of this stuff made, as Phil said in the interview, they've got to raise the funds.
Right.
And if there's a wealthy benefactor listening, then get in touch with me. I'll get you in touch with Phil Lawler and let's make this happen.
Exactly. Right. Lots of money. Yeah. That's what we need.
When you said benefactor, all I can hear is Archie Hackler saying, benefactor. However he said, benefactor. I can't do it.
There is one thing that I do want to make sure to mention real quickly, and that is not really a parental warning, but there is a couple of instances where there is a word that's used that some people do consider to be a mild cursing, a mild cuss word. So, just be aware that is in there. It's not anything worse than you might hear in more secular audio dramas. But I just did want to mention that and make sure that if parents want to listen to them first, make sure that, they're okay with that. Just wanted to make sure that was known. But we highly recommend the series. It's very well done. The storytelling is good. And there really is some great moral lessons in it as well.
Yes. And it looks like they're heading in a more obvious direction of that kind of thing too. But it wasn't super overt in this first one.
Mm-hmm. Link in the show notes to go get your own copy of Elliott House or check out that first episode, which is on their website for free.
So what do you think of the show?
Please leave your message after the tone.
Hi, Audio Theater Central.
Hey, guys, this is Austin Peachy.
Hello, JD, Roy, and Andrew. My name is Victoria.
Now, yesterday, I received a letter from a big fan.
No time to chat. I've got to email this.
Another package for me today.
No, it's actually just your mail.
Hey, if you would like to give us some feedback, you can send your emails to feedback@audiotheatercentral.com or text or call 623-688-2770. The first piece of feedback we have today is a comment on the blog from Abigail, and she said, I'm new to Audio Theater Central. I found you through the official Adventures in Odyssey podcast. I love listening to your episodes. I heard you mention about Robert Young. This is so funny because
it's a recurring thing.
Yeah. We mentioned something in passing on an episode or so, and then we get all this feedback about it, and we solve the mysteries. I love this.
Yeah.
It's perfect. But she said, about Robert Young being in the Secret Garden. I got that on CD when I visited Focus's headquarters several years ago. On the back, it gives you a full cast listing. That's what's so nice about having the physical copy.
Right.
Because I just have that one in digital.
Full cast listings.
Yep. And it said that Robert Young played Colonel McGrew. I re-listened to the beginning part to see if I could identify the colonel's name, but it isn't said. After looking in the book, it says that Colonel McGrew and Barney find Mary in the room after everyone else has died when she's back in India.
Hmm.
She says, hope that helps. So,
the
yes.
first scene.
Yep, in the very beginning of the audio drama. That was Samuel, I believe, who was asking about that. So information is trickling in about Robert Young.
We also had an email from Jackson who says, hello, JD, Roy, and Andrew. Having episode 100 coming up in 7 episodes, keeping closer track of this than I am. That's
wow.
Are you doing anything special for the landmark? And he also says, I want to thank you for suggesting Shadows and Daylight. It's awesome, especially episode 7. Thank you.
Hey, so who was in episode 7?
Huh?
Who was in episode 7? Why is that so special?
I don't know.
Yeah. I have no idea. Shadows and Daylights were in there.
Our very own J.D. Sutter.
Yes, it was a lot of fun. Yeah, and I'm glad you're enjoying it, Jackson. I had a lot of fun working on that show and just had a conversation with Christopher Green, the producer of that show, earlier this week, and there's some really cool stuff coming up in that show. So if you haven't started yet, go ahead and start checking those out. Those are all free to stream on the website, although they do have digital downloads available for purchase. So check out Shadows and Daylight. But man, episode 100, I mean, it's coming up. It's quickly approaching.
Yeah.
I don't know what should we do? I mean,
have an interview with Philip Glassboro
for episode 100.
I think that sounds splendid. Let's do that.
Like, who better could you get? I mean, maybe Jess Harnell, but that'd be about it.
That'd be fun.
All right, what do you
get? He said he'd do it already, right?
Yeah.
There we go.
What do you think about that idea, Jackson, and anybody else who's listening for episode 100? Should we interview Philip Glassboro?
And or if you Philip Sherlock? Well, either one.
Yeah, either one. I mean,
we'll take either one, yeah.
I think that might be a man in the mirror kind of a situation again. But yeah, so I like that idea. I like that idea. And if you have any other ideas, I mean, last time for our big spectacular 50th episode, we asked you to let us know what we should do, and we pulled out some clips from the previous 49 episodes that you suggested. So, you know, maybe we'll do a little bit of that. I don't know. It's a lot of work to do that.
Yeah.
So, well, we'll see. But if you have any ideas, let us know. Get in touch with us. Comment on the show notes, audiotheatercentral.com/94, or any of the other methods. They all come to the same place, so.
Yeah. And we got an email from Keegan. They say, I totally agree to what you talked about in your latest podcast. Hal Smith was definitely the best actor of all of them. There are more similarities between Andre and Hal than between Andre and Paul. I think the way Andre says things is the thing some people cannot get used to. He takes deep breaths as he says things. Paul and Hal, on the other hand, had a much stronger voice. If you listen to Andre and Hal say one word, they sound very, very similar. It is definitely a shot going from Paul to Andre, just my take. I like what each actor brings to the character.
And again, that's what it comes down to. I mean, mm-hmm. I think Micah even said, you know, you're taking
right
appreciation for all the different actors. You know, it doesn't detract from the value of the episode by what each different actor's take is on the character.
Right.
They're different. They're different actors.
Right.
And it's really hard to step into an established role like that.
Yeah.
That's been going on for years and years. I think. How long has exactly. Andre been involved? At least 6 or 7 years. It hasn't been 10 years yet, has it?
It's close. It's got to be close.
Yeah, it could be close to 10 years now. So, I mean, if that's the case, the character had been around for 20 years already.
Right.
So it's difficult. So I like how these little tidbits have been inciting some discussion. So
what's funny is it's been going on for almost 10 years, and we're still talking about it.
Yeah.
Like, and this when is you say still... funny, you mean strange, not haha funny. It's strange. Maybe why both. Are we still Maybe talking both. About this?
You know, sometimes I just sit and I'm driving down the road and I'm like, really? Like, we sit around and we just talk. Like, all these people just get crazy about just this audio. But I was like, wow, that's pretty cool.
Yeah. You know,
we got to get excited about something.
Super fans.
Yeah.
All right. Let's move into a couple of tidbits real quickly. So I will be going to the Adventures in Odyssey Get in the Show finale in August. So this is obviously a time-sensitive message here.
Hmm.
If you're going to be there, let me know. I'd love to meet you. And I could use some help. So I'm going to be trying to check in with some fans at the event and get some photos and maybe even interview some of the actors and stuff. And I could use a hand of somebody to tag along and help me out, carry gear and stuff like that. I mean, hey, no pressure, but if you want to, I would love to have you hang out with me. So yeah, get in touch. Let me know if you're going to be there. August 12th is the event. So let me know. And also, Ian Boltman sent me an email the other day, just giving a little bit of a heads up on what's coming up in the next season, season 6 of the Brinkman Adventures. I'm really excited about these episodes because I'm extremely fascinated by this era of history, the World War II era of history. I love the story, The Hiding Place, and all the just the incredible people who risked everything, their livelihood and their very life to help hide the Jews or any yes. Jewish sympathizers. And so I just find that so fascinating. And they have a series of episodes. He said, we just got back from the Netherlands recording 2 episodes about the Dutch underground, of which my grandparents were a part of. That is so cool.
That's awesome.
That is amazing.
And so he says, I'm very excited about releasing this new story that deals with protecting the vulnerable, even when it is risky. And we have a couple of other episodes on the album that deal with the same concept. And so I'm really looking forward to this next season. That sounds like there's going to be great stories. He said they're shooting for a target release date of sometime in November 2017. So looking forward to the Brinkman Adventures. And love what they're doing over there. Well, that was a lot to go through.
Absolutely, but it was good.
I mean, we're probably a little biased, but I think it was a great episode.
It was a lot of fun, that's for sure.
Hey, we would love to hear from you. Check out the show notes. Everything we talked about, links are all there at audiotheatercentral.com/94. There's even an amazing photo of Roy, Andrew, and me, and Phil Lawler in Salami Studios in the show notes. Just because. Yeah, I thought it was applicable here.
That's right.
Yeah.
And in that photo, there's the studio door has a window, and there is a reflection of somebody in that window. Let us know who you think, if you can identify that person. I would love to hear that. So if you need a hint, you can reach out and ask for it. But get in touch with us. audiotheatercentral.com/contact has all the ways to get in touch with us. Join the ATC Insiders, and we'll let you know about what's going on. And we will see you next time. Thank you so much for listening.
Hey, this is Jackson from Glendale, Arizona. Audio Theater Central is a production of Porchlight Family Media. Our theme music was composed by Sam Avendania. The show is produced and edited by J.D. Sutter. Our website is audiotheatercentral.com.
What room can no one live in?
What room can no one live in? Well, obviously not the living room, because everybody's living in there.
That's right. The mushroom.
Oh, my goodness.
However it goes.
It goes like this.
Starting off well today.
That's a great poem, by the way, by Robert Louis Stevenson.
The Lamplighter, yes. The Lamplighter. All right.
Really is, though. It's good. You should read it.
Alumni foil.
Yeah. We have great aluminum finish.
Aluminum foil.
Yeah, there we go.
Aluminium.
Aluminium. That's yeah. I knew where you were going.
Lamplighter Guild aluminum.
Israel aluminium.
No, I'm losing my headphones.
Oh, dude.
It's,
help!
Oh, yeah. Hold on.
Israel, help.
Oye, lumare. Oye, lumare. Oye, lumare.
Poor JD, this is going to be a few terrible hours for you.
Yeah.
14-year-old orphan, Jeffy Daisonson, apparently, is what I was.
That's weird, because that channel's muted.
You can't turn it off!
That's really weird.
Huh.
We were hearing the past.
I had made a ridiculous statement.
This is going to be a long episode.
Right?